I would like to begin by thanking the Russell Foundation and Dr. Bauer and Mr. Talbot and the other organizers for putting on this very important event. And I would like to greet the participants and the audience for participating and being here. Now let me make a few preliminary comments about language, which is very important. I will usually or sometimes use the word we, the multiple, the plural, or the word I. I am really speaking for myself and to the extent to which many other people who agree with me and participate, share this point of view, to that extent I'm speaking in the plural. Now words are very important in this business that we are considering today, because in some ways war against humans begins with a war with words. And I might call your attention to the placard, to the announcement that you see in front of you, the 5th International Russell Tribunal on Human Rights in Psychiatry, Berlin. Now this is an oxymoron, a self-contradiction. There are no human rights in psychiatry. Psychiatry is about human wrongs. Now to make this point simple and obvious, can you imagine a meeting on human rights in dermatology? On human rights in immunology, in cardiology, in gastroenterology? So obviously psychiatry is a medical specialty whose specialty is to do dirt to people. Now how does it do dirt to people? Well, it's very simple again. There are two aspects of human dignity that we all treasure. And they are really two aspects of the same coin. One is liberty. Now, psychiatry specializes in taking away people's liberty. Now, this is called in the jargon hospitalization. But if you are locked up in a building, it doesn't matter if it's an Adlon hotel, then you're a prisoner. So how good or bad the building is very important, because it's better to be in the Adlon than to be in some horrible prison in Turkey or Bangladesh. But if you can't get out, you are imprisoned. And I think if we forget that, we have lost the battle. Psychiatry should have no more right to lock up people than dermatologists do, or professors of English. Now the other way in which psychiatrists deprive people of humanity is by saying that they are not responsible. Well, you think of responsibility usually as a burden, but actually responsibility is a right. You are responsible in that you decide for being in this hall. If you don't like being here, you get up and leave. Now, how do psychiatrists do this? By declaring individuals not responsible for their crimes, for which they would like to be responsible, and then locking them up and saying, we are not punishing you, we are treating you. Professor Alexander will greatly expand on this. Now, how can doctors or lawyers or policemen do these terrible things to human beings? Here again, the answer is contained in one very important word, English word, probably a German equivalent exists, and that is that the interference, the act, has to be legitimate. Legitimate means has to be right. Has to seem right to the people who are doing it and to the people to whom it's done very often and certainly to the public. Now, the original legitimator of doing wrong to people is, of course, forgive me for saying this, God. Religion is the instrument by which people have traditionally been persecuted. Now, religion does a lot of good, but it has, to the extent to which it has used power, persecuted people. This is essentially the principle on which freedom of religion in America is, and separation of church and state is based on. Now the second great institution of legitimation is, of course, the law. The law is a system of rhetoric, explanation, and so forth, which tells the world it's wrong to steal, but it's not wrong to use your own property and to sell it, perhaps. And in this sense, the law legitimizes involuntary psychiatry and the insanity defense and all the other wrongs which are inherent in psychiatry. I object to the terminology of psychiatric abuses. Psychiatry is an abuse per se, to the extent to which it utilizes power. Psychiatrists as doctors need no more power than cardiologists. Now, which is a third great instrument of legitimation, especially in our age? Now, Professor Naro already referred, and you are all familiar with this wonderful letter, which is really a gem from Professor Heuser, which says that we are damaging science. But who speaks for science when it uses power? Well, it wasn't that many years ago that Albert Einstein's books were burned in this city. Obviously, that was not good science. Well, that felt that long ago. Now, our meeting is, they can't burn it anymore, but they can throw it out. They can not cover it in the press. They can totschweigen it. And that's exactly what they do. Now, what's the fourth instrument of legitimation and delegitimation? Obviously, if you have power to legitimate, you have power to delegitimate. And that's the media. Now, the media, I don't want to blame too much, because everybody has to make a living, and the media are essentially whores. They are prostitutes, but that's an honorable profession. You give a service and you get money for it. Well, the media live on advertising, and mental patients can't advertise. Pharmaceutical companies can advertise. Psychiatrists, in a way, indirectly, can advertise, can benefit the media. So, can you imagine when all of these forces, God, law, science, the media, and the state, all agree that there is such a thing as mental illness and that psychiatrists know how to diagnose and treat it? Well, that's quite a task to take on, this combination of forces. This is one of the most massive combination of untruth, of falsehood, in probably the history of mankind, similar to previous falsehoods usually connected with religion, sometimes with science, exemplified by the argument about the heliocentric and geocentric universe, explanation of the cosmos. You know, does the Earth revolve around the Sun or vice versa? Now, that was a nice example of a fight about an untrue truth. What we have in psychiatry is untrue truth. Which brings us to the analogy between psychiatry, as we see it, as I see it, and heresy, and religion. Essentially, our point of view of heresy. So naturally, if we want to present our point of view in the Vatican, that the Pope is not delegate of God and so forth, like Luther, again, the German analogy, wanted to, well, what happens? Well, Luther was smart enough not to accept the Pope's generous invitation to come to Rome to be greeted and congratulated. So he escaped being burned at the stake, like Hus and all the other Protestants that they could get a hold of. Now, Protestantism is now an accepted religion. It was then a protest against Catholicism in its abuse of power, not in its moral code. I have no objection, personally, to psychiatry between consenting adults. Psychiatrists say that they are doctors, and they are indeed doctors. They go to medical school, they have an internship, they are licensed by the state. They are doctors. All I am asking for is that they behave exactly like other doctors, and that is not be able to do anything to any person called a patient without the patient's consent. A And the most important right a patient has is a right to say, doctor, thank you very much, you go to hell. It is very dangerous to talk about the right to treatment, the right to services, and so on, because the minute you start doing that, you are going down a slippery slope. Now, people do need help. It is not my purpose in this presentation to speak about the problem that is called mental illness. Right? Suffice it to say at this point that what we call mental illness is the human manifestations of the turmoil, the vicissitude, the tragedy of life. Life, as I like to say, as I used to tell my children, life is no picnic. Don't expect it to be a picnic. It's a struggle, at the end of which you die. Now let's get back to two issues of liberty and responsibility, and the loss and deprivation, because after all, typically, when liberty is lost and then responsibility is lost, it is not lost passively. This is very important. When a person gets a poliomyelitis, let's say, or a stroke, he uses his ability to move his limbs. But he doesn't lose any political liberty. He's no less free. He cannot walk out of the room. But he's politically free. Now, to confuse these two things is fatal. So that liberty and responsibility are taken away from people. To wit, psychiatrists, lawyers, judges, as representatives of the state. Only the state can do this. All of them act as representatives of the state. Now, again, to emphasize the obscenity of Professor Heuser's letter, he says obscene, no other word is right. These are not medical matters. Whether or not psychiatry is making great progress is a legitimate question. I personally think it's going backwards. But they can call it progress. But regardless of whether it's making progress or not, liberty and responsibility are not medical matters. Doctors know no more about liberty and responsibility than do ordinary people, not to mention theologians or philosophers. What then is the problem before us? Again, it can be summed up in one powerful word: the medicalization of life. In particular, the medicalization of so-called bad behavior, whatever that might mean. See, people have no interest in medicalizing good behavior. People have no interest in saying that Professor Heuser's letter is due to mental illness, or is anti-anything. But they are quite ready to say that our point of view is crazy and deviant. This is a question of who has the majority view, who has the power. And then they call it some medical term. Now, human problems are human problems. Typically, problems in the family, economic problems, problems in the individual and the state, such as criminality. Modern societies have developed various informal and formal criminal ways of dealing with these things. What we advocate is a complete separation of psychiatry and the state, on the analogy of the separation of church and state in America. If psychiatry were deprived of any state support, it would, for all practical purposes, disappear without anything else having to be done. Because there would be no way for a psychiatrist to get hold of a patient who doesn't want to be a patient. And if someone wants to be a psychiatric patient, that should be his right, her right, just as much as if he wants to go to church or a synagogue, who doesn't want to go to a church or synagogue or anywhere else. I think I can summarize now by repeating what I said at the beginning. That we demand that psychiatrists act like other doctors They claim to be doctors, let them act like other doctors. You may have noticed, just by living your life, that other doctors are not too eager to claim having power over patients. Many medical doctors can a great deal of good for patients. Now take the example of a patient with diabetes. Now doctors, endocrinologists, specialists in diabetes treat diabetics. Patient goes to a doctor, is diagnosed, and is told to take insulin. He has a right to stay home and either not take any insulin at all and kill himself that way, or to take so much insulin that he will die very quickly of insulin shock. This is not considered to be a problem for the doctor who treats diabetes. This is considered to be a problem for the patient. He has been told what to do, and now he does whatever he wants to do. The same thing could be repeated ad infinitum. With lupus, with hypertension, arthritis, brain tumor, you name it, any specialty. The doctor's responsibility is to help the patient by giving him proper medical opinion, diagnosis, and treatment with the consent of the patient. In America, and I suppose in Germany, I don't know if this is the case here, but in America, if you go to a hospital, before you see anybody, assuming you are not in shock, it's an emergency case, before you see a doctor or a nurse or anyone else, you are ushered into an office and are given 20 forms to sign. They are all legal documents. They are legal documents which empower doctors to take x-rays, to take blood from you, to make diagnoses, to do all kinds of diagnostic and therapeutic things, and to notify your insurance company of your diagnosis, and so on and so forth. These are the first steps. Now the first steps in comparison in psychiatry is that you sit at home and the police show up and handcuff you and say you are dangerous to yourself or others. Your wife has called and said you might kill yourself and we better take you to the hospital and you have lost all your rights. Now, not only you lost all your rights, but anybody who wants to help you has lost all his rights. Because supposing you know a lawyer who is friendly with you, and you call him up and say, I'm in a mental hospital, get me out. Well, in 9 cases out of 10, this lawyer will say, well, this is very difficult, why don't you just cooperate with the doctors, they'll probably let you out tomorrow. Now, if you call a psychiatrist and say, get me out, the psychiatrist will say, let me alone. Now, if you get a psychiatrist who is like one of us, some of us here, and you go and try to help this patient, what happens to you is that your testimony is considered to be essentially as crazy as that of the patient's symptoms. Because the court has decided that the psychiatrist that say that the patient is crazy is a scientific psychiatrist. So this step of taking the person and transforming him from an American citizen, let's say, or German citizen, into a patient is the crucial step. And I think it is fair to analogize that step in this place, and I apologize for this kind of, I don't want to overwork this, but it's very similar to transforming a German citizen with an Iron Cross who only speaks German, whose grandparents were German, and who is a proud Prussian, and saying, you are no longer a German, you are a Jew, you are a vermin. And then everything follows from that. Thank you very much.